Morning. Out here with Flo. Oh, just seen a cat. Great timing to press record. Yeah, she wants to chase it, but no such luck, Flo. You're on the lead, which was thankful. So now we're going to have a lot of whining while she searches for this cat that's long gone, disappeared. Far too quick, far too smart. Anyway. Yeah, good morning. Well, what an interesting week it's been. Caused a bit of a kerfuffle, it seems. I just wanted to maybe share a few thoughts and a few reflections. Obviously, been giving it a lot of thought. Been a really interesting experiment, I suppose, in how people respond to certain provocations, shall we say, certain words, and what people's views are against some of these sort of kind of opinions and notions, and the kind of the way the emotions it stirs up. It's really quite interesting. I'm putting together quite a long Twitter thread to talk about this, but I thought I'd also share some thoughts on here because it's easier to do that, and I can think things through a little bit better, perhaps with you all live. So where do I start? Well, first things first, just want to say a few thank yous to some kind people who reached out to me and were pretty supportive. Obviously, there's a group of people on Twitter who are sort of I guess aligned to my way of thinking. Who have been very supportive, and even people who I initially had kind of terse exchanges with initially, like Dusty Miller, have subsequently reached out and we've had a conversation. And needless to say, the medium of conversation ends up being the more productive exchange. Don't necessarily agree with each other, agree to disagree sort of thing, but we made some progress, and we had a clearer understanding of each other's position. One of the things that Dusty actually said to me was, and he recognised this, was he never really asked me why. He said in hindsight he would have phrased his initial response differently and said, "Why do you think that?" Or, "Do you really think that?" Or, that seems extreme to me. Can you expand and explain?" And I thought it was kind of interesting as well. I didn't really consider that, but it is interesting to note that the opposition, a lot of the opponents of what I was saying, one of the responses was, "You don't know what's going on in the video. You don't have the full context. You need to understand more about what's going on and why." And I've got my own thoughts about that, but it was interesting that I had lots of those kinds of responses. Whilst people were responding in that way, at the same time, they're not, they haven't taken the opportunity to ask me what my context is and why I would be putting out something as extreme as that. The reaction, I guess the primary reaction is one to, kick against, push back, call it ridiculous. So it does show the power of the Twitter outrage machine. And I guess to a certain extent it was an interesting, I was obviously a provocation, as many of the things I do are often. And sometimes when I'm doing that, it's because I'm interested to see, kind of where the where the response will lie, you know, and what people's reactions would be. I know it's dangerous because sometimes it can polarize, and you know, you can find people, you know, kind of almost reject your message. And you know, quite a lot of people who I'm, you know, close to, or you know, I trust, and you know, are very supportive, you know, did actually kind of make that point. You know, is this serving you well? If your goal is to bring people with you, then is this going to do that, or is it just going to basically create division? And it's an interesting point, isn't it, around things like, you know, rhetoric and language, and does it bring? And that sort of made me think, well, what is my goal here? And I don't know if my goal is necessarily to bring people with me, because most of the people, well, a few of the people who responded to me, not all of them, but a few, have got perspectives that they're not really going to change, which is fine. And, you know, some of the responses you get, you just think to yourself, well, if I'm honest, that's somebody who's, in my opinion, lost. Or so kind of, I guess, indoctrinated, perhaps, enculturated, that they aren't able to see something else. Now, having said that, another part of the reason for a provocation was to basically say to people, what do we think about this? Now, I could have asked that question that way, definitely could have, and it probably would have been a lot more smooth, right? But it wouldn't necessarily have had much traction, you know. Or it would have probably just ended up in the same place, because it's the nature of the beast. But it was the reaction that was the stimulus for the discussion and debate, you know. And it seems like it is pretty sort of 50-50. You've got people out there saying, yeah, I'm not sure I'd use the word cruel, but it's pretty, you know, really not very good. Or you've got people saying, yeah, I mean, I think this sort of stuff we've got to get rid of. It's just like, you know, not what we want to do anymore. And then you've got some people saying, you know, other things. So you've got some people on the other side of it sort of saying, well, you know, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Calling this sort of stuff cruel. There's so many worse things. Da, 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 da. Yeah. And that sort of makes the conversation go where it goes. Had I not used such a, not been so provocative or inflammatory, would we have had such a response? I don't know. And am I trying to bring people with me? I don't know if I am. I think I'm just trying to, I'm just thinking aloud, really. I'm not really trying to kind of, you know, create a tribe or anything like that. I'm just, I guess, to a certain extent, I don't want to say posing questions, but I'm, I guess, just almost testing, like, you know, where are we as a sports industry? Where are we as a community of coaches, or, you know, kind of human developers? What are we all about? What are we? Why are we here? What are we doing this for? What do we value? What do we accept? What do we tolerate? What's the sort of thing that we think is, you know, a good thing to offer? Now, that's the difficulty here for me, because one of the things that I'm really like disappointed about is how so many people are just prepared to walk on by. So a lot of people responded, like, you know, negatively, positively, whatever. At least they responded, that's fine. But quite a lot of people who responded were like apologizing for it. So, like, there's obviously Warball Gate, as it's referred to. But there was Warball, and then there's this one. And for those of you who haven't seen it, you shouldn't be hard to find. It's basically a square with some cones, lock cones. We've got kids passing through a square and then going round the square and doing what's referred to as footwork by doing little dance moves over cones. I mean, any other walk of life, you just look at it and go, that's just ridiculous. But anyway, so maybe I should have said ridiculous, not cruel, ridiculous. Probably would have got the same response. Anyway, but what was interesting was a lot of people, the first thing they were doing, same with Warble, was defend the person who posted it. And say, how dare I criticise? And who am I to criticise? And how would that person feel? The person who's posted it, how would they feel? And how, you know, and you know, had I considered their feelings? And now, you know, coaches are going to be scared of posting things. And, you know, and there's other coaches out there who aren't going to post anything because they're afraid of being criticised. Well, I mean, look, I put something out there, right? I put something out that people deemed ridiculous, right? I thought wall ball was ridiculous. I thought kids dancing and doing little dance moves around a square with footballs was ridiculous, right? So when I posted that, not a single person, right? Not a single person defended me for my perspective, right? You know, and said, why, how dare you say that to him? And people were calling me mental. You know, people were saying that, you know, it's crass clickbait. People were saying that it's, they were going FFS and all this sort of stuff. People were absolutely, oh, some people were completely and utterly, in my opinion, unhinged by it. And these are people, some of these people I know, right? And I've interacted with personally, right? And they have become unhinged because I called an activity form a form of cruelty. Now, I'm going to go on to, in a minute, I'm going to go on to why I said it, and I'm going to give you some context. Nobody asked for that, but I'll give you as to why it is, right? And I'm going to talk a bit about this response. So the coaching community will defend, right, an individual who posts something, regardless of its subject matter, and you are not allowed to criticize it. Or at least, apparently, if you do criticize it, you have to criticize it in a kind and supportive way, regardless of how ridiculous you think it is, or how harmful it is. Okay, now you might say, well, these things aren't harmful, they're not really doing any harm. I'll give you reasons for why I think they are. But for now, if you think they're harmful, right, what do you do? Just walk past it. You know, I see, they describe Twitter as the town square. So if I'm in the town square, and I see something that I think is, you know, like unfair, unjust, or, you know, or it's not helping, or it's, you know, kind of almost like a low level microaggression towards another human being, or a group of human beings. Should I walk past it? Should I intervene? Well, it's the same. I see these things and I think I've got to say something. And I'll tell you why, right? Everyone's bothered. You watch, just have a look at the responses, right? Those who are against it, generally speaking, right? And watch what the nature of the responses are. They care about the person posting. They care about the rights of the individual, they perceive rights maybe, or the feelings, sometimes, of the individual who made the post. They don't care, hardly at all, right, care about the young people, and they're mostly young people, who are subjects of the post, who are in the post. They don't care about them, right? What the hell is that about? Now, you might have your own view around and say, well, I think, you know, you're able to, you know, these sorts of activities, they're perfectly justifiable given a certain set of circumstances. Given the appropriate context, this is a perfectly justifiable activity. To call it cruel is absolutely ridiculous. Fair enough, right? But my view is different, right? Because I have a view on the kinds of experiences that young people get in sport, and my view, and my view, yeah, it might be different, right? But my view is that a lot of what kids get in sport is really not anywhere near the kind of experience that they either deserve, or have a right to, or more importantly, are the kinds of experiences that if we are all, as we all espouse to be, passionate and serious about young people having positive experiences and therefore lifelong joy and love of physical activity, which everyone says they're doing, and some of these things we've just got to question. Don't just accept them, just blandly, just because they've become normalised. Genuinely, let's ask a question. Really? Do we have to do that? Is that really the best we can do? And to ask that question is almost blasphemy. It's almost sacrilegious. To ask that question of the coaching community publicly on Twitter, you're not allowed to ask that question because you're deemed to be criticising a fellow coach. And we shouldn't criticise each other. We should support each other. Well, I'm sorry. If I see something that I think is wrong, I'm going to say so. Why? Well, because I've got the courage of my convictions. Now there's degrees, right? Okay. I've got another video that I can post alongside of a kid who looks like he's maybe 4 or 5 with a parachute on and a weighted headband and weighted shin pads or something, doing these kind of cone drills, running back and forward. He's got an elasticated rope on his head, I think, or on his back that's pulling him back, right? And kid's 4 or 5. Right, so I guarantee, right, if I post that and say, this is a 4 or 5-year-old, right, being coerced, and let's face it, okay, influenced, coerced, forced, right, to do stuff they probably wouldn't just say they want to do on their own. And by the way, anybody who says 4 or 5-year-old would like to strap themselves up to an elastic thing, right, they might want to do it maybe for 4 or 5 minutes because it might be okay. It might seem like it's some fun for a while, but then after a while, when you do it a few times, it's like, oh, I don't really want to do this anymore, right? But this is being promoted as good. Because you look at the commentary. Look at my ex-child grinding. This is the language we're using now for killed kids. Grinding, working hard. His future's bright, right? These are the messages, right? If we let them go without challenge, right, they become normalised. Like so much has become normalised in the world of sport for children and young people. So much has become normalised that people no longer think it's wrong or bad, no longer question it on a daily basis. You know, like children being bought and sold, physically bought and sold, and metaphorically bought and sold. Right? Children are objectified, commodified. We know this. Nobody disagrees with it, nobody does anything about it. And when you see children, essentially, you know, being sort of subjected to these kinds of things because apparently there's a rationale. There's a reason, you know. And people use this word, oh yes, it's about meeting the needs of the child. I reserve the right to do any kind of activity at all, because it's about meeting the needs of the child. Needs. Who defines the needs? Coach. Knowledgeable person. Person who has the information. Create the rationale. Not child. Because if it was about the child, it'd be about what they want, isn't it? Never talk about children's wants. Not even their wants. What about their rights? Fundamental rights. The right to play. Read the UN Convention of the Rights of the Child. It's all there for you. The right to play. The right to be heard.
the right to an appropriate developmental experience, the right to be free from discrimination and abuse, the right to an appropriate educational experience, rights. And here's the thing, right? Learned this recently from amazing people at UNICEF. What a fabulous charity they are. Because they've got a sport division. The thing they taught me was, children have these rights. It's actually enshrined in the UN Convention. It's the most signed up to international treaty in the world. You know, the vast majority of countries have signed it and ratified it. It's one massive outlier. We'll look at who that is. And so if we're signed up to this treaty and we say that children have rights, then, and the thing is, then we become duty bearers. In fact, we are duty bearers because they have these rights. They're inalienable. Context specific, the right to play is inalienable. It's not like, oh, well, we'll play here, this situation, but not there. No, they have a right to play. Right? So people go, say to me, okay, well, they're going to get to play at the end. The session would have gone there, right? We're just doing this as a warm-up. Or we're just doing this as a, you know, this is just part of the session, right? Working on footwork drills or whatever it is, or footwork activities or agility or something like that. And then we're going to get to the game. And I'm going to say this, you don't need to. The game will carry all the water for you. Listen to my podcast with Chris Cushing. Yeah, we don't agree on everything. What do we do agree on this? Nine the game, right? Carry all the water for you. You don't need to. So this stuff's unnecessary. Right? So doing things that are unnecessary because you think they are. Why? Because there's a dominant narrative around what coaching is and what coaching should be and what coaching looks like. Doing these sorts of things, helping. We're just accepting. We're just tolerating. We're just maintaining the status quo. Apologizing for this kind of stuff. Just allows it to continue. You know, do you want to be an ally? Do you want to be a change maker? Are you serious about change? Because a lot of people talk about change. They get big, big noise and rhetoric and, oh yes, we're going to change the world. What do we want? Change. When do we want it? In an appropriate amount of time, done in a really kind of nice way that won't necessarily upset the apple cart too much. That's the big shout. I don't know if it's good enough because I don't see enough change happening. You know, I've been in this industry a long time now, and I promise you, right? I know, right? I am shamefaced enough to admit I am and was part of the problem. It's only in recent days that it's only in recent years and days that, you know, I've begun to understand that, you know, I was wrong for a long part of my career as a coach and as a talent developer. I was wrong. The stuff I was doing was wrong. Systems I was designing were wrong. They were actually just creating a sort of ongoing, continuous system of the same stuff, just dressed up differently. Emperor's new clothes, as Andy Kirkland said. And what I'm doing when I say this is cruel is I'm saying the emperor's got no clothes on. One turns around and goes, yes, he has. Perfectly good clothes. Really nice clothes. And how dare you say he hasn't got any clothes? That's rude. How must he be feeling? So, with a lot of these conversations, right, it's difficult. It's difficult to have these conversations. We need to stop getting worried and bent out of shape about words, right? And the feelings of people with big followings, you know, promoting themselves as providing high quality experiences. And they've either got followings because they're, you know, part of a professional organization with a degree of kind of reputation and credibility. And they're, you know, putting their ideas out there and people are following them because they're thinking, well, if it's good enough for that professional sports organization, it must be good enough for me and my kids. Or people who proposing to say, oh, this is about high quality, you know, physical education, physical activity, right? If you propose that, right, you've got to accept you're going to get some criticism. I get criticism all the time because of what I do and where I work. That happens all the time. You just have to accept it. It's part of the gig. You go out there with your following and you put something out there, some people aren't going to like it. They're going to take it on board, right? But then for the rest of the coaching community to just round up and say, no, 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 you can't criticize. You can't criticize. That's mean. It's polarizing. You shouldn't be doing that. I'm sorry, no. I just think that all that does is just perpetuate. My old dad used to say to me before he died, well, he died quite a while ago, but he used to say to me, he had some great lines from time to time. This is what it says was, if someone's in a fight and you hold their coat, you may as well have punched the person yourself. Interesting. There's a question. This is the point about allyship, right? Something I've learned a lot recently. Fabulous bloke called Laddie Ajayi, who's part of a project that created the Tackling Racism and Racial Inequality in Sport report. And he taught me about allyship. It's the idea that an ally, if they witness an act of discrimination, or they witness a harmful act, even a microaggression, something that's low level, that you would normally roll your eyes at, or shrug your shoulders at, or, kind of walk on by, that's not being an ally. That's not making change. If you don't agree with that stuff, right, and you let it go, you're part of the problem. This is the same. I know everyone's not going to agree with me, right? But some people might. And if I, by doing that, will create the kind of reappraisal that gets some people to go, actually, yeah, no. I think we've got to start reframing this stuff. We've got to start thinking about it differently. Actually, let's stop thinking about it as poor practice, which is just apologetic language that is more acceptable to people. See, now let's call it out. Okay, so first things first, one thing I should have said this right at the start, actually. Cruelty, a form of cruelty. Okay, that was a bit strong. I'll admit, I was being deliberately provocative. I went too far. So I didn't necessarily mean to do that. And I certainly didn't want to see some of the crazy responses I got, A couple of people have blocked me. Fair enough. Whatever. It's what it is. The problem is, I think some of the people who blocked me are actually well-meaning, good-natured people. So they've kind of been lost to the discussion. All right. Fair enough. I understand that. Sometimes that's just the price of doing business. And if that's the way you're going to go, probably eventually you're going to go that way anyway, because you're not going to like what I'm talking about. Because, okay, I might not want to say the word cruelty, but I'm going to say something else. I don't know what it is. I can't think of a better word. Right? I'm trying to think of a different word. I can't think of one. Like, mistreatment? I think people would get bent out of shape about that. Is it a form of aggression? Maybe that's going too far as well. Is it, poor practice is probably the best I can come up with. Suboptimal? Feels too weak? Poor practice feels too weak. Probably still would have got the same response though. Answers on a postcard. Can't think of a word. It's definitely not, okay. It's not cruelty. Fine. But if you think of cruelty through a different lens, right? So for me, if you deprive somebody of freedom or another organism of freedom, that's cruel. So if you take like battery hens, factory farming. Cruel, which is why most people don't buy free range stuff or stuff that takes sort of animal welfare seriously, even if it costs a little bit more money, right? So that's important to think about, so in this case, right, when I see this sort of stuff, I just see young people like having their freedom taken away. They're being forced to do something that, let's face it, they wouldn't design for themselves, unless they're completely indoctrinated by the adults around them. If you put a group of kids together in a park with some balls and even some cones, they wouldn't design a drill. I mean, I have seen it, by the way. Don't get me wrong. I have seen it in my park. Kids designing drills for themselves. It's only because that's what they've seen in their coaching sessions and they're replicating it and they think it's good for them. Or they're told to do it. If they haven't ever experienced that, they wouldn't. They'd play. And These things are designed by adults for other adults, because it's either perceived as good practice, or it's what the other adults expect, or it's because the adults haven't ever really given any consideration to what the young people want, or deserve, or have a right to. They think it's what they need. So what are we doing here? We think we're giving them what they need, because it's necessary. It's a necessary evil. The evil. When I said evil, people would have gone mental. Like, I mean, pretty mental or cruel. So that would have gone to a different level. But that's when, you know, a necessary evil. Is it necessary? No, it's not. We know it's not. Right? We know, and you can have arguments about transfer all you like. You can have all those different conversations. This isn't even an ecological conversation. This is not an ecological dynamics thing, right? I'm aligned to the principles, right, and some of the ideas behind ecological psychology and ecological dynamics and nonlinear pedagogy and constraint set approach. Why? Because they act as a gateway. They act as a way where you don't have to make these compromises anymore, right? You just don't, right? It's far more about the individual. It's far more about how they interact with the environment, and it allows them the freedom of exploration and creativity, and it has it hardwired and baked into the whole concept. So yes, but this isn't that, right? I'm not talking about it from that perspective. I'm talking about this from the perspective of what do we think is right and wrong in the world of sport and physical activity? You can hear me getting really quite exercised about it now. Why do I get so exercised about this? Well, one of the challenges that I do face, you know, I have the privilege of working within, you know, a powerful and influential and an organization with significant resources. And those resources enable us to gather information and insights that tell us more and more and more about the nature of the sporting experience. And that lens, the lens of the organization now, very much focused on discrimination, inequality, inclusion, and reducing these barriers, however low level they are, because sport should not be something that is excluded from people. Everybody has a right to be able to be physically active, right? And when you work in that space, you are exposed to ways of thinking, you are exposed to insights, you are exposed to... Oh, I'll go further as well, by the way. It's not just about inclusivity and anti-discrimination, it's also about tackling abuse, right? Because there is way too much abuse, systemic, right? You know, it's like, okay, I know they're extreme cases, and I know they're thankfully relatively minor, right, or relatively infrequent, but there's enough, and there's enough frequency to make you really want to look and go, what the hell is going on? And when you read that stuff, please read the White Review. When you read that stuff, you look at yourself and you think, we are part of this. We are not doing enough to challenge the narrative of children's sport, to be able to make this sort of stuff like a thing of the past. You know, like saying to a 5 or a 6 year old, you know, you need to be doing 35 hours a week of training. I kid you not. 3 hours in the morning before school, 4 hours in the evening after school, eating in the car on the way. What happens to that parent who was influenced so strongly by sort of otherwise knowledgeable individuals, right? That they thought that was necessary. And if it is, then what are we doing it for? I mean, really? Totally, in some cases, it is totally and utterly broken. It is morally abject. I look at sport now through the lens of morality, and I say, enough, there has to be a line. We have to say, no, this is it. No, no more of this. Right? We've got to challenge what we're doing constantly. If we see something we think is wrong, we not only have the right to challenge it, right? But we also have an obligation, a duty to challenge it. If I am a duty bearer, And the children have inalienable rights that they hold. And I am a duty bearer, whether I'm a representative of a club as a chair, whether I'm a coach, whether I'm in an organization that directs policy. If I'm a duty bearer to the rights of these children, it is my obligation, my duty, to challenge when I see their rights have been infringed. Now, everyone, even this conversation I'm having now, people will think I've been extreme. People will say, oh no, you've gone too far. These little exercises, they're not the worst thing in the world. They really aren't. You're going after the wrong thing. You should go after the real abuse stuff. But that's the problem, isn't it? Because, you know, I can't remember what the quote is, but, you know, any organisation or society, right, is only as good as the behaviour it will tolerate. Right? I think the actual quote is the lowest form of behaviour. But what you're prepared to walk past. I think it was John Amici said this. He's a brilliant campaigner for equality. He said, you know, what your culture is what you're prepared to walk past every day. Something like that, he said. I'm probably butchering the quote, but I heard him speak, so it was a while ago. But it was along those lines, right? So I'm paraphrasing, right? The culture is what you're prepared to walk past every day. So, you know, I'm not prepared to walk past. I'm just not. Now, am I going to tone down my language? Well, I'll try. I'll definitely try, and I will definitely think about the kinds of things I say and the way I say them. I'm not going to be silenced, though. I'm certainly not going to be silenced because I work for an influential organisation. I don't ever use my platform there necessarily for this kind of thing, right? I recognise that, you know, my position does carry some privilege and it also carries some influence, right? But anything I say or do, I am using it as a force for good. I want you to understand that this is about, please understand that I only ever have positive intent, even if I am what seems to be aggressive towards another person within our workforce. It's because I'm doing it to send a signal to others. This is not okay. I'm not attacking the person. I'm attacking the thing that they've promoted. I'm attacking its validity in a modern, inclusive, open and equitable sports ecosystem. Right? And if we want that and we want change, we all have to get behind the idea of challenging it. You might not want to use my language, right? Okay, fine. You might object to my language, fine. But understand the why. This podcast has all been about that. Understand the why. Ask why. If you want to, you know, with any of these things, these provocations, first question we should ask is why? And maybe that's the way I should maybe challenge people when they put the stuff out there. You know, instead of being maybe so snarky or satirical, I use a lot of satire. You know, try and be satirical. Maybe people don't like that. They see it as being, you know, kind of snide and, you know, maybe they see me as being condescending and patronizing and all that sort of stuff. But I guarantee you, if I asked a question, you know, they'd see that as passive aggressive because somebody like David Hinchliffe asks a load of brilliant questions. And then people say, oh, you're passive aggressive. Oh, it's just up. Why don't you answer your own question, right? And the reason is that people are really struggling to answer the questions because they haven't necessarily thought it through. And that's what creates the reappraisal. So anyway, that's full on rant, that is. Apologies. But I needed to get a lot of things off my chest. I mean, one thing I'll say about this is that, you know, we need to genuinely think as a cohort, as a community of coaches. We do need to have a bit of a think about what it is we're doing here. And I don't think these post hoc rationalizations saying, oh, well, you know, context this and context that and this, that and the other. No, there's a line. I know where I stand, right? Because I'm bought into a set of principles and a set of ideals, right? I espouse them all the time. The vast majority of them map on to ecological dynamics, right? I talk about that all the time with passion and vigor. Why? Because I believe. I believe it offers a different view. I believe many of the traditional viewpoints are just keeping us stuck, held back. It's just stopping progress. The voices of conservatism. When you hear people say it depends, that's people just saying, I want to keep it the same. Or I want to be able to justify anything I do. Sorry, it's just not good enough. It depends on something.
And you have to ask yourself what question? What does it depend on? And you have to be prepared to answer that question. Hold ourselves accountable. Anyway, thank you for listening. Love you all. I hope this has been of some use. Look forward to the next installment.